here we are with another episode of Keeping Up With Data with Sean,
Emily,
and Ben.
Woo!
So Ben has came all the way up from Adelaide today, not just for the podcast, but for other reasons as well. If you want to give a bit of background, Ben, to who you are and introduce yourself.
Absolutely. It's good to be back in Sydney, really. I was telling you guys offline, it feels like home. My wife and I, we used to live here about 6 or 7 years ago. We were here for a couple of years, living out in the western suburbs of Sydney, and just decided to go back to a little old lovely Adelaide. But here this week, meeting up with a bunch of clients, and obviously sitting on the podcast with you guys today. So it's fantastic to be here.
Yeah, so we've got a lot to get through today. A couple of different topics, not just your average data ones. I think I've been itching to get the footy one out there, of course, with the background on that one. So we go through the footy. Ben works for Horizon, which we can touch on that a little bit further as well. And Ben obviously has a good background in the AI space, so we'll delve into that.
Welcome to Keeping Up With Data. Keeping Up With Data is the podcast that keeps data enthusiasts up to speed with what is happening in the data world. We bring in the leading minds from the data industry to talk all things career, news, embarrassing stories, failures, and successes.
But I suppose firstly, I really want to start with the footy.
Tapping out.
Everybody does.
And throwing something straight at you with the Crows and Port Adelaide.
Oh, Port Adelaide all the way, mate. Yeah, we're going to get a bunch of people just turn off right now, aren't we, for me saying that. everybody, it's funny. And I love the AFL, obviously being from South Australia, and that's it really is like a religion back home. Like, we just flock to the Adelaide Oval every weekend and go and watch the footy. And, it's probably of late as well. We've been able to tie that up with a little bit of data science. Like, everybody wants to know how the tips are going, yeah? Like, you're asking whether the Crows or whether the Power are going to win the premiership this year. And so we decided to do things a little bit different this year and see if we could create an AI that could predict the footy tips. So, yeah, we've kind of leveraging a bunch of the latest and greatest that's happening out there at the moment. And, the kind of GPT models that are all the rage. And what we do is basically scour the internet for a bunch of expert quote-unquote opinions, get the video transcripts from the shows on Fox Footy, etc., and see who all the expert tipsters are tipping, and mash that all together, and then ask the AI who's going to win each week. And so far it's doing okay.
What's the like success rate?
Pretty good. Better than average. So probably about 70-80% at the moment. So, it's early days, and it's realistically a fun type of project. But it's really cool to tie something that a bunch of us really really love, obviously the footy, and then tying that into our work lives as well.
I wish I had you like 2 weeks ago when the Swans were playing, because the Swans were against Carlton, and I was like, Swans, definitely. And I did like a same game multi, and one of the multis didn't come through, so I just lost all my money. I shouldn't have done it. I suck at betting.
I told you about this as well. You should have leaned on Ben.
The amount of people that are like, God, you talk to my mates about this kind of stuff, and they're like, so who's going to win? And then they get out their sports app and
So you have all your friends down in the pub. Ben, show me what's going on.
No, I wouldn't go risking a bunch of cash on it just yet. But it's a bit of an obvious project, it's a bit of fun. So.
It's training at the moment.
This is true. This is what we'll tell people.
Who's going to win this year is from the app?
My biased opinion tells me Port Adelaide's going to win. But I think the Swans are doing pretty well this year, so...
Yeah. So for the non footy fans over here, AFL is the Australian game. It's not rugby or anything like that. It's the Aussie rules. Ben has set up an aggregator for that to predict scores. But I suppose more into the business side of things now. So from a background perspective, obviously, I suppose maybe give the network a bit of a history as to how you landed in tech and what the passion is and where you're working at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. So probably following that sport kind of theme as well. Originally, coming out of high school, didn't really know exactly what I wanted to do. Started studying biomedical engineering. I thought it was the best parts of, the engineering, math type of work that I really enjoyed in high school. But then it also gave me a bit of a flavor for, the sports and that kind of aspect as well. So firstly delving into that, and actually that took me to Canada, to Toronto. So working as a biomedical engineer over there, working on brain computer interfaces. Whoa. Which it's really, really cool. And this was 2014, 10 years ago, we were working on these sorts of things, which is almost pre-AI, if we consider what AI is these days. So 2014, we were plugging ourselves up to a bunch of EEG electrodes and trying to determine what people were thinking, let's say, quote unquote, reading minds. we weren't particularly successful, mainly because of the hardware limitations, actually. Mm-hmm. And I know that Elon Musk and all the guys working on the Neuralink and all those kinds of projects, they're all really focused on the hardware, getting the really good signals. But that was a really, really interesting time, working on some really cool stuff back then, and support vector machines for those technically minded. And they were the kind of cutting edge, convolutional neural networks and whatnot were just kind of coming through. And we were using some fairly rudimentary techniques, but for me personally, that was kind of my entry into AI, and been at it ever since. So obviously now at Horizon, been there six and a half years now. So we're a digital sovereign company that services a bunch of different industries, defense primarily, but also utilities and natural resource and a few others as well. And AI is a big part of that. We have a large capability in AI, and that's the area that I head up. But we also have some other capabilities in terms of simulation, advanced sensing, and even cyber now as well. So trying to tick all of those boxes in terms of what is Australia going to need moving forward, in terms of protecting and empowering all of those industry sectors that we service.
Was the med tech left in Toronto, or how did you kind of evolve from med tech into now the Horizon side of things?
Yeah, it actually brought me here. So I after uni, I wanted to come and design stuff. Like in Adelaide, I could have stayed there and I could have fixed machines and done a whole bunch of stuff like that. But I really wanted to kind of be the one designing machines and designing these types of algorithms and stuff. So that brought me to a company called ResMed, who are based out of Bella Vista. Mm-hmm. Really, really good Aussie success story. Started way back. We were working on ventilators, CPAP machines, all that type of stuff. And I guess the stuff that I was working on out there was more signals based, so like reading different sorts of body signals and trying to interpret little bits of data from that. So ResMed were actually a pioneer in the data space as well. So what they did quite a number of years ago was put a Bluetooth chip. Actually, no, it wasn't Bluetooth. It was like a telecom chip that could send data back up to the cloud. And the reason that they attached those devices onto their CPAP machines was so that the insurance companies could see if people were using the machines or not. Which is really interesting because for people to get the most benefit out of these machines that they've got in their homes, they need to be using them, don't they? So
it's probably been some crazy advancements in that space. We won't delve too much into the medical side of things, but while we're on it, there's definitely been a lot of advancements since 2016, 2017, as to now 5 years, 6 years of total change within the industry. AI is the hottest topic ever right now, but in that med tech space, there seems to be a lot of correlation for ourselves from data science, ML, AI in that space. Would you look at going back to it at some point, or like how do you see the med tech space going from when you've left versus now?
It's certainly a slow moving beast in comparison to a lot of other industries, and I think especially so here in Australia, because we just have so many regulations and so much red tape that we need to get through to actually get something from a concept all the way through to a product that people can use. And I mean, that's for good reasons as well, because we're not just going to be chucking out anything into the wild. And when people go to hospital, they're expecting, you know, high quality stuff as well. But yeah, it's a really interesting time for medtech, because there is a lot of really cool stuff that's coming out of universities and the like. I think probably the easiest entry point is actually, you know, the wearables and stuff that we kind of wear every day. I mean, we don't really think about it, but they're all packed with AI. Even I was talking to someone the other day, and we're talking about how autonomous vehicles are really a medical device as well, because, you know, someone who isn't able to walk or operate a car, suddenly they're able to get from their place to work.
Yeah, fair point.
Without intervention. So we don't really think about it too much, but yeah.
I was going to ask you as well, you mentioned in like 2014, sorry, I'm backtracking, but on the topic of med tech somewhat, you mentioned 2014 was like the AI of that kind of generation, or where you're at in the data world. How does it sort of differ in your mind, the definition from then versus now?
Yeah.
I know it's a big question, but
yeah. I think the definition of AI kind of remains the same. From my perspective, like, artificial intelligence is literally anything that can help us make a decision. Again, for those technically minded, it could be as simple as an if-else statement. If it's raining outside, I'm going to take an umbrella. Like, that is the barest bones artificial intelligence. Probably where a lot of the advancements have come is in the neural networks, the transformers, reinforcement learning, like those types of technologies that have really been accelerated over the last few years because of big data. You know, the guys in Google and that, they were able to train these transformer networks on trillions of words of text.
I've seen Google has a new product that's come out. I literally only seen it today, that it's, I don't know the full ins and outs of it, but basically it's like a prediction model where it can do internal body scans and predict like your lung capacity if you've got infections in it. It can predict. Yeah, like it's like an AI X-ray scan.
You got one right now with this like chest?
No, not yet. I might go get one after this to be sure. But it can predict like the probability of heart attacks. It's like an AI MRI scan, but basically an AI MRI scan where it can predict anything in a sense based on
wild
whatever it's basing it on. But it looks pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you think about it, like if you were to go into, you know, a doctor's surgery and get them to diagnose you, they would be looking at the exact same kind of things, wouldn't they? So all the AI is trying to do there is replicate exactly what the doctor's doing.
That's what an old friend of ours says. One of their doctor friends does follows the chart. It's like no one can actually tell you what is exactly wrong with someone who comes in. It's like you've got to follow a history chart of like, oh, this person had that problem, that links up with that. So maybe you've got this wrong with you. But now with AI, it's actually like, this is actually what's wrong with you.
Yep, we can definitely
get more clarity around that. So moving on then from the med tech side of things, obviously Horizon, you guys have some pretty cool products and stuff that you're building. What is it you guys are working on at the moment?
So probably where we kind of fit in is two spaces in particular for the artificial intelligence projects that we're working on. So we have a bunch of really clever data scientists and machine learning engineers that are kind of creating, so we call them the AI creators essentially. So they're creating really cool models from a bunch of data. Now, for us, we do a lot of work in the geospatial space. So for example, taking a satellite image, like a two-dimensional satellite image, and then projecting into 3D so we can estimate tree heights, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what our AI creators would do. And then we have a just as important, and this is probably a bit of a differentiator for us as well, is where we're able to enable that tech too. So it's really cool if we're able to, you know, create something and show people some pretty graphs, etc. But where it really becomes valuable is when people are actually able to use that on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So again, taking that example of the geospatial monitoring, working with power lines companies, where we're able to, take an image and predict what the tree heights are, and then they're able to use that in their risk mitigation plans to say, okay, we think that this tree is going to, could fall on our power lines, so we better get out there and, you know, cut it down. And if they're going to be able to do that for, like, every month, every quarter or whatever, that's a lot better than them having potentially someone drive out to every single road in New South Wales, let's say, and have a look at all the trees and say, yep, that one's good, that one's good.
Make
one's
a blank good. Estimate. Yeah. That one looks like it might fall down in 50 years or maybe tomorrow.
That's right. So, yeah, that's kind of what we where we play. So the creation and then the enablement piece as well. And that probably spans not only just the AI landscape, but the other kind of verticals that I was talking about as well before.
Yeah. So you mentioned there's a couple of different areas that you guys focus on, utilities, defense.
Yep.
What? So, for example, a project in defense, what would you guys be helping defense sections with?
Hush, can't we?
Can't disclose.
Yeah, there's lots of really cool stuff that's happening in defense. I think probably some of the stuff that people see on the news these days is like autonomous vehicles, you know, like drones and all that kind of stuff. Like, obviously, some of those are kind of manually controlled, you know, with the equivalent to like an Xbox controller, I suppose. But then they also have ones that are autonomous as well, and you know, picking out targets and doing all sorts of stuff there as well. So that's when it starts to get you know, a little bit scary, I suppose. Not to say that that's the kind of stuff that we're actually doing, but yeah, there's lots of stuff in the autonomous autonomy space in defense, and then probably more so in the utilities and like the natural resources sectors. That's where we're leveraging these other data sets to basically inform them of things that are happening in their remit, or giving them better tools to make decisions on, such as using satellite imagery to predict the heights of trees. So yeah,
that's so cool. I love that. I feel like, well, it's a massive sell for Horizon, by the way, you know, because of what you're doing, the projects and stuff like that. Because I feel like, I don't know about you, but I always get people asking about like vegetation, LiDAR data and all that kind of stuff, which is a bit more GIS focused. So
yeah,
it's awesome.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing is it's fun. Like, it's all really new stuff. Yeah. It's really, really fun. And like, yeah, we've got a really, really good team of people, majority of people based back home in Adelaide. But kind of growing all around Australia as well. And yeah, because it's new tech, everyone, it's so easy for people to, you know, label themselves a data scientist these days, as you guys would know. But yeah, the team that we've kind of built up over time is really doing some cutting edge stuff, and that's really exciting as well.
And they're all based in Adelaide?
Majority.
Most of them. Yeah, okay, yeah, cool. Yeah.
We've actually been seeing a bit of a pull back to a
rebound.
So like
the boomerang effect.
That's right, the boomerang effect. Yeah. So I'd probably classify myself back in the day as you know, being part of the brain drain. We used to call it in South Australia, where people would leave Adelaide, you know, for the big smokes of Sydney and Melbourne, and these days I suppose now Brisbane as well. But there's actually a really big pull to come back into Adelaide. So probably more than half of our hires into the AI space this year have actually been from interstate and moving back into Adelaide. People just love it. There's a really big tech vibe. Big buzz in the city.
I did hear a couple of years back that Adelaide was supposedly going to be the new tech hub of Australia.
Yeah.
Which maybe COVID halted that ideology. But now you think there's a lot more evidence that people are coming back, maybe COVID impact housing prices,
people don't want
Sydney.
Hustle anymore. People want to like a low-key life, but can hustle at their own home.
That's right. And they want the good wine, the good food.
Yeah.
But absolutely. And I suppose like with more people being able to work remotely and whatnot as well, like there is the ability to work in different places.
Yeah.
You don't always have to be on site. So like, for example, majority of our clients aren't actually even based in Adelaide. They're based all around Australia, internationally as well. So, and we're still able to service all those clients because of how we operate. So
Yeah, that's so good. I feel like part of that was actually to do with like the tech hubs, right? With the Big Four set some of them up in Adelaide, didn't they? And then there was big buzz.
KPMG, I think, had a big ramp down
and
there.
And PwC, maybe.
We've had a bunch of companies come and set up shop. Those guys, and AWS, and a bunch of the big defense primes as well, because there's a lot of defense activity happening.
It's good for you guys.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, for talent, because it's so hard to find.
Question for you, Ben. How would you determine, it's always been in the back of my mind, but probably no better man to ask. We've seen a lot of transitions of job titles over the years, like data engineers, analytics engineers, DBAs, and our database developers. Titles change as time goes on, which is natural progression.
Yeah.
But for us and yourself, obviously, how would you determine or even define the difference of a data scientist and an AI engineer?
Yeah.
Because we're seeing a lot of people that are maybe rebranding themselves early ahead of time because they've done a bit of data science work, they've done statistical models, they've done neural networks, in a sense, NLP, they've got the basis of it.
Yeah.
What's the difference between AI engineer and data scientist in your mind?
I'd love to know that too.
Yeah. It's a really, really good question. So we, at Horizon, we have three titles that cover all the people that work in the AI space. So we have data scientists, machine learning engineers, and software engineers. All three of those have a really significant role to play in creating the AI models that we are creating, and then also deploying them. That's what I was talking about before, the enablement piece. So the way we kind of view it is data scientists are typically the ones that are, they're the ones that are getting in the weeds of the math and doing all of the, the crazy analysis type stuff, building those models. The software engineers are typically the ones that are doing the infrastructure piece, building up applications and building interfaces for people to interact with whatever the data scientists are creating. And then there's the middle role of kind of the machine learning engineer. And this is actually a really, really crucial piece as well. And I think more and more we're seeing this role become more important, and more people are kind of fitting into that remit too, that they're able to liaise between the software engineering cohort and the data science cohort as well. And it's really important because we need something that kind of binds everything together. Otherwise, again, you just end up with some really cool graphs, or you end up with an interface that does nothing. So you need to leverage those two, and that's kind of how we view it.
It's a good way to put it. I feel like straddles both somewhat, but kind of maybe needs the depth of both, which makes them quite unicorn like.
Yeah, I suppose so. And I think we also have, I suppose, people with kind of dual titles as well. So like people that are more heavily focused towards being a data scientist, but also know enough software to be dangerous in that space too. So maybe they're a data scientist. Yeah, dangerous. That's it. Yeah,
that's a good word. Danger.
Yeah, they know enough to be dangerous. Yeah, like those people that know enough to be dangerous in the data science world, but then also are able to deploy things in the machine learning engineering context as well.
It's like that old saying, I don't know if I'm saying it right now, probably not, but different strokes, different folks, or something like that, where you guys have your set regime of these guys do these things and it's plugged into the business and it works. But for another company, it might be like, I data scientists, they're ML builders, pipeline builders. It's like,
varies
really per industry.
It does. It does. And it's really difficult to kind of adjudicate the competency of people too, because, people come to us and they've been an AI engineer for 5 years. Well, where do they kind of fit? Are they actually doing more data science? Are they doing more machine learning engineering? I suppose when it comes to it as well, you've got one's a science and one's an engineering facet too. So engineering, which is probably where I've originated from, we build stuff. And then scientists, they experiment and explore. So that's another way of potentially.
That was always my differentiator. Yeah. It's like builders, engineers are builders. They build, and that was always what was ingrained in my brain.
I want to know, I suppose it kind of, you answered the question, but like if you saw a AI engineer apply to a job, or your AI job, and then you saw a data scientist apply to your AI job, like what do you, I suppose, what do you want to see on paper from like a, for an AI engineer or for one of those middle people that you guys described as ML engineer?
What do I want to see?
Throwing you right on the spot.
Sorry, yeah, I know. No, I'm just curious. Take your time.
It's a good question. I suppose it's cliche to say that the number one thing is you know, they've got to be a good cultural fit for the company as well. And we've hired people that they didn't have experience in either of those things, and you know, they've become really good data scientists. I guess an ability to learn, and that's probably reiterated in the fact that data science in particular, I guess software engineering to a large degree as well, changes so rapidly. So if you went to university 5 years ago and you studied a master's in data science, most of the content that you would have got taught is kind of outdated now. So there'll be the fundamental concepts and stuff that'll still stay strong, but you wouldn't have got taught about transformers. And you would have probably touched a little bit on reinforcement learning. You probably would have done a little bit more on the computer vision side of things. But the ability to learn really is really what we're looking for. And that's a really tough thing to put on paper, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, also it's like cliche because if you see that on a piece of paper, you're like, okay. Like, you know, attention to detail and ability to learn, like those kinds of things are really fluffy.
Yeah.
So then like when Sean and I are recruiting for someone, for example, we're like, sure, we'll find someone who's able to learn. But like that means so many different things to so many different people. And then also knowing the fundamentals need to be there before, like, because you can't just find someone that's like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of someone really.
Albert Einstein.
No, where I'm going is like basic, kind of really green to the world of data and everything, and then just upskill them because they have the ability to learn. Otherwise, everyone would have a job. Does that make sense?
It's the mold ability versus fixed mindset type thing.
So if we come back to like the footy bot, for example, the guys that actually worked on that and developed that back in Adelaide, they hadn't really done much work in that space before. It was one of our our data scientists. He came and he said, "Okay, let's do this, guys. Like, we just want to explore." He's our machine learning specialist, and he's an absolute guru, Mark McDonough. And he came to the team and was like, "Yeah, let's just do something in this space." And a bunch of guys put up their hands and said, "Yep, I want to do it." Most of it they just did in like their kind of spare time or, you know, professional development time. And they taught themselves. And I guess the really good story from that is actually we were able to use that for a couple of different projects, pulling together proof of concepts in an afternoon, where it would have probably taken us a few weeks to actually pull that together if we hadn't have done that project initially. So the ability to learn, the willingness to learn and actually go out there and do some cool stuff, that's a really big piece. And you're not necessarily going to find that someone's writing that down on a piece of paper, but you certainly will be able to gauge that, you know, in the first 3 to 6 months, whether someone's actually genuinely interested in AI, or whether they just are saying they want to be in that space because what they're doing currently isn't really ticking all their boxes for them. So,
are you going to productionize the footy model, reverse sell it to sports bet or something?
I don't know. We kind of had an unwritten rule that we're not going to. It's purely educational, and we're not going to bet any money or anything like that. Probably the only piece of competition we've got a footy tipping competition back home, and the footy bot is on the footy tipping comp as well. It's actually not top. There's a couple of people in front of it, it's getting better. So
sell it to Man City.
Yeah.
they use a lot of data science guys behind the scenes to like track. Ben obviously could speak a little bit more on it, but football teams now hire like heads of Man City have a head of data science specifically
even
for
the, yeah even all the um uh the AFL teams in that as well. Like, they
do
have
they?
Traveling. Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Mm. Traveling data scientists. So I don't know if that's their exact title, but.
Like a performance analyst or something.
Yeah. Okay. So they'll go and watch the team play and, you know, send the stats back up to the coaches and all that kind of stuff. So
that'd be quite cool.
I'm surprised you didn't wear your Crows jersey in.
Yeah.
My Port Adelaide.
Nah, I'm a big Port fan, so I'm
sorry to say Crows.
It's really interesting though. So, like, even on the stats side of things, like, my brother, he is an absolute guru at memorizing all the stats, and he managed to get himself a job with Champion Data, and so, like, not doing any of the data science necessarily, but counting the stats, how many kicks, handballs, tackles, all that kind of stuff.
My dad's doing that now after retirement.
Yeah,
back into his old club to do some stats with his brother who's managing the team.
It's good. Yeah.
Excel based stuff. Calls himself a data analyst. But I think moving on to the more back to the AI world, Em's probably got a few bits and bobs.
I was
going to
ask about the AI world, like, because we've obviously touched on the fact that it's changed a lot. Similar fundamentals, but changed. How do you manage change with AI right now? Because it is, like, heavily evolving. People are quite skeptical. There's a lack of trust.
It's going to take our jobs.
You know, all that kind of stuff, which, like,
it
we
took
know.
Our jobs.
Yeah, we know is like, okay, it's going to be an enabler for a lot of things. But, I suppose, how do you manage that?
Yeah. I mean, the whole change management piece is a really, really big one, isn't it? Like, if we looked, like, even, like, 50 years ago, the jobs that people were doing 50 years ago compared to now, like, how many are we talking, like 20%, 30%? There'd be, you know, nurses, police officers, etc. All those ones are still there, but and who would have thought that data scientists or data analysts would have actually been a job these days? So I think we've been at this for quite a while. So we were I've been at Horizon for about 6.5 years now, and back then, it was more of a science. Like, people were experimenting with things. The people that were willing to invest in it were, you know, out of defense or out of the, you know, mining, etc. The guys that had a lot of money and had a lot of data as well to leverage off. Where it's kind of transitioned to since probably it's become mainstream with ChatGPT and all that, you know, Joe Blogs on the Street's now talking about it, and that's probably that's the new scary stuff that potentially it was scary, but now people are just, like, interacting with it like nothing's ever happened. You know, people talk with Siri all the time, the other day, people asking ChatGPT how their day was and that kind of stuff. And
I've seen ChatGPT talking to ChatGPT where it's like, "Hi, I'm an AI assistant. How can I help you?" It's like, "Hi, I'm here to help you too." It's like, "What can I help you with? What can I help you with?"
Yeah. But exactly right. So I suppose, like, that becoming mainstream has kind
normalized
of opened up the floodgates for all of the other AI to kind of follow as well. And I think people recognize that it'll certainly take over certain parts of people's jobs, and people's roles will kind of adapt to use AI as opposed to just replace it completely. Like, even if we think about, like, the calculator or when digital computers first became a thing as well, you know, like, what happened to the typewriters? Well, they used a different tool, didn't they? They started typing into a computer that saved a document as opposed to typing directly onto a piece of paper. So I think fundamentally people will adapt over time, and, you know, society, the world will adapt and we'll get there. Just hope that Australia can kind of keep up
I feel like it's probably, like, the lack of trust piece as well comes with, like, the lack of maybe, like, regulation, privacy, you know, all those types of things that people are oh, there's nothing in place. Like, there's no government, you know, per se for data and AI. So that would probably be one thing that people are like, not adapting. Bye.
But it's humans feeding the machines the information at the end of the day. If you break it down into layman's terms, it's like the information it gets is from what humans put into it.
Yeah.
So that ethics piece, it's probably too late in the game for it to be 100%.
Yeah.
It's such an interesting topic that you could talk for on days. Like,
I think one of the other things as well is that a lot of the advancements aren't necessarily just coming out of universities or government institutions anymore. They're coming from companies, you know, private organizations, and some of the big companies over in America especially. And that's probably what's scaring people, what's scaring, you know, the governments and whatnot as well, because how do you regulate something that you didn't build yourself and like you're not experts on? Yeah, I think there's a lot of really good stuff that's happening with AI advancements. But I think the main point is to make sure that everybody has access to it. You know, if the advancements are locked down to a handful of companies, well, yeah, then that's when we're going to run into strife. Yeah. But if it's kind of shared across society more at large, we are going to get those benefits and the risks will reduce, I feel. So.
I don't know how I'm going to convince my grandma. She's got like a burner phone and everything. She's like, full like, don't talk to me about like AI and everything. That'd like, it's out to much. Get me. Yeah. God, it's bad. What about like Horizon? I suppose we've kind of touched on your team, but you guys are, from what we've discussed offline, looking to rapidly grow. There's a lot of like cool, exciting stuff that's on the horizon for you.
Yeah.
On the horizon.
Horizon.
Yeah, that's horizon.
Has that been
said before?
Yeah, it has been. Yeah.
Oh cringe. No. So tell us more about, I suppose, like if someone's to come and join Horizon, what they're in for.
What's
like,
on the horizon?
Yeah, what's on the horizon?
There you go. There you go. I love it. Yeah.
Wrapped it up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and obviously AI is a big piece of that, and we've talked to that today as well. But basically, again, we're taking that kind of same mentality. Really cool things being developed in universities, government institutions, etc., and kind of wrapping our flavor on it to enable these things, because ultimately that's when people get the most benefit. And when it's kind of being able to be used by end users, there might only be a couple end users for some of our products or services, or there might be many, many users. And it's important to kind of recognize that too. So, I mean, in the other spaces, like we're doing a lot of really cool stuff in the simulation space. We have a product called Infinite Studio, which is basically a simulation engine built off Unreal Engine. And it essentially mocks environments and vehicles, aircraft, etc., in a pseudo-realistic way. And we're able to analyze not only what's happening in the kind of visible spectrum, but also the invisible spectrum, so the electromagnetic radiation and that kind of stuff as well. And that's kind of critical, obviously. You can see that in defense, but having massive applications. And then I suppose, like, again, we have a lot of expertise in a lot of really niche but really important aspects of technology that I think some of them are at their infancy, and then some of them are at we call them like TRLs, technology readiness levels, and some of those are more ready than others. So it's a really cool place to work. Like I've been at Horizon for 6.5 years, as I said, and I love it. We're just solving really cool problems all the time. And I guess one of the things that we kind of encourage our people to do is look at what is on the horizon, I suppose.
I've got a new
idea. I'm not going to say that again. look at what's out there, and then bring that in, and then apply that and deliver that to our customers. And that's it's fun.
So would you guys have a big push on some of the guys in the team to do your own R&D, go off, try find new things, bring it back in? Or have you got a section in the business for pure research and development?
It's an interesting question, and it's one that we that we're dabbling with all the time, because we try and encourage that across the entirety of the organization. And in some parts, it's more difficult to do that than others. Obviously, sometimes we have specific projects that are, you know, here are the requirements, don't deviate from that. And then there are other times where customers come to us and say, oh, I want this thing done. And then we have to go away for weeks on end to try and figure out the best way to do that. So that's kind of how we do our R&D. And obviously, we do have a couple of products in particular, like Infinite Studio, for example, as I was saying. That's we do invest in and look to develop as well. But yeah, it's a really, really important piece of working at a company like ours, to make sure that you as an individual are always at the kind of top of your game as well. So,
what about like more of a pitch for yourself, being the head of AI and everything ML?
For those curious listeners out there who might want a piece of the pie.
Ooh, Adelaide might be traveling home, you know, like want to go back to Adelaide. Go for a cool business.
We have a really, really good kind of developing HR side of the business that, as I was saying before, we're looking to increase our size quite rapidly. And to do that, we need to have people in place that are, you know, bringing people in. But then also, once people are in, you know, training them and making sure that they're actually able to go out in front of clients and perform how we would expect them to perform as well. So Adelaide's awesome. I can't speak highly enough of Adelaide. I mean, having lived in Sydney, lived in Toronto, in Canada for a period of time as well, always just managed to find my way back to Adelaide. And we're pretty set there now, which is good.
What about you though, as a leader? Like, what is your, do you have like a philosophy? I know it's really broad and like lame term, but like, you know, anything that you
would, mantra.
Yeah, something mantra, like that. Wisdom.
Yeah, I like seeing if people can swim, you know. Ooh. So if because I suppose, and that's probably one thing that was always kind of granted to me, like that opportunity to just, okay, Ben, you go ahead and do this, and we trust you that you do it. And that's a really big piece for me as well, that I think I've tried at least to impart on the people that report to me. And you know, if they swim, awesome. Fantastic. That's exactly what we want them to do. And if they sink a little bit, well, we just give them a little bit more support, and we can wrap our hands around them and provide that to them. But I think it is it's for the individuals as well. It's really quite empowering when your manager, who's asking you to do a whole bunch of tasks, says, "You do it the way that you think you should do it," because ultimately, that's what we want. We want people to think outside the box and problem solve, because that's what we get paid to do as consultants as well. So
I like that one a lot.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, same.
Encourages creativity rather than bottlenecking them into, you have to build this, it has to be done this. It's great.
Well, I think, like, I'm not naive enough to think that I'm an expert in everything. Like, as I said, we do a lot of work in the geospatial space. I'm not a geospatial expert by any stretch of the imagination, but we have people that are, and they're the people that should be, you know, asked upon when we're asked really tough, curly questions. You know?
Yeah, I like that. What a good plug for your leadership. I feel like we're coming to the end of the podcast, so is there anything that we've missed? I feel like we've covered some good topics. We've covered your background, AI, trust, change, the footy.
One thing at the top of my mind, we didn't mention the tech that you guys are using in Horizon. If there's anybody listening out there that might be interested.
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, yeah. So we, in the say in the non-defense space anyway, for our AI, deploying, you know, 95% of our offerings in the cloud. So cloud is a really big one. It's probably that's where that software engineering, machine learning engineering piece really fits into it too.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so much easier to deploy things in the cloud. You can switch things on and off from anywhere, and then I suppose on the back end even further, we kind of standardize to what the industry standardizes to as well, like using Python, mm-hmm. for example. It's very, very well supported in the industry, and especially in the open source community, obviously, and using packages like TensorFlow and PyTorch, etc. We don't try and rewrite the wheel all the time, but a lot of times we do actually have to get right into the weeds of the code, so that's really, really important.
Mm-hmm.
You're not a data scientist in my mind if you're just writing .train, .fit, .predict kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like you really do need to know more than just that. We obviously encourage our people to get really into the weeds, mm-hmm. There as well. So, yeah.
Nice. I like it. Well, I feel like...
I think that's a natural progression to the ending.
I feel like it's been a really good podcast. Covered a lot of ground. Thanks for coming on, Ben.
Yeah. By the way, Ben came all the way up from Adelaide just for this.
Yeah. You better be at the end right now with us. Awesome. We'll wrap it up there.
All good.
Cool.
So something really important for us here at Precision Sourcing is mental health. It's something we've been focused on a lot over the last year or so. And we're lucky enough to have partnered with the Black Dog Institute. And we're going to be doing a lot of events with them this year. A lot of our events, money will be going towards them. And they're out there aiming to create a mentally healthier world for everyone. So if you wish to support the cause, please donate via the link in the bio on this podcast. And you'll be seeing a lot more information about Black Dog over the next year.